Don't look back because the market is closed. Good Wednesday afternoon, everyone. Kip Herridge here with the Daily Bear Investing Podcast. Hope you had a good day today. It is Wednesday today, isn't it? And we know that because today is Fed Day. Yesterday, of course, the FOMC meetings began. Today, we got the result of that with the Fed statement. And Jay Powell's presser, always the edge of your seat kind of a thing, isn't it? Actually, I got to tell you the truth. He's kind of grown on me. They've made five major policy errors since Powell's had this job. By the way, Powell got the job because Trump put him there. But he's made five major policy mistakes. Of course, the biggie, which Tyler talked about yesterday in his great dissertation of all the mistakes that the Fed's made, is a transitory inflation. That's the one everybody remembers. But I think it's pretty obvious. If you watched today, and if you didn't, don't worry, we've got the results for you. What's obvious to me is the Fed is determined not to make another major mistake. That's why my takeaway from today, by the way, I got to give Jay Powell credit. I give him a standing ovation. He's an A++ for me on the job that he did at the presser today. He stayed on script. He stayed committed to the message, which is we're staying the course. Steady as she goes. That was the message today. And most importantly, data dependent, which is what the Fed should always be, right? Data dependent. What he sees now is what I think he should see, which is there's a lag effect. There's a long time lag effect. The great economist Ed Hyman at Evercore talks about this all the time. There's a lag effect of about 18 months, 12 to 18 months, before the Fed's policies really start to work. And that we're there. We're there from the time they start raising rates. So think about this, folks. People have been looking for a rate cut now for well over a year. The first Fed rate cut was supposed to happen in the first quarter of last year. That was when it first started to happen. And it didn't, obviously. The S&P 500 is up 30%, more than 30% from that date. So you tell me, does the market care about rates? I don't think the market cares. Not really. Now, obviously, if we get past 5%, 6% on the 10-year, then now we're talking about a different story. But I think we've got a lot of evidence now that the Fed current rate coverage of 5 to 5.5% on the Fed funds rate is not a market impediment. Don't we have that evidence in front of us? Does the market seem to care? No, the market doesn't seem to care. I'll talk about that more in a moment. The funniest part, and I think the most telling for me about today's statement, when Powell got a question about the latest buzzwords coming from the geniuses on CNBC and Bloomberg and elsewhere, that, oh my God, we have stagflation. Now, I'm sure you've heard it. I've heard it. It's the new buzzword. It sounds like a scary kind of a word, doesn't it? So Powell was asked that today about a report. He was ready. He was ready for the answer. He said, I don't understand where these concerns about stagflation are coming from. He goes, we don't have the stag or the flation. Stagflation in the 1970s was 10% employment and high single-digit inflation with very slow growth. Right now, we have 3% growth, GDP, and inflation that's under 3%. So again, I don't see the stag or the flation. Great answer from Powell. He's exactly right. We have nothing. We really could not be further away from what is called stagflation. I think the next time you hear someone say that, you'll realize you're talking to someone that likes using buzzwords, but doesn't know what those words actually mean. Let's put that to bed. Doesn't mean it can't happen in the future, but right now we don't have it. We don't have hyperinflation. We don't have stagflation. We have a strong economy. These are unpopular statements, and Tyler and I understand this, okay? We hear this all the time. What are you talking about? The economy is strong. What do you mean that the economy, the consumer and American companies haven't been this strong in decades? What are you talking about? Well, folks, we're talking about facts. That's what we deal in, facts, economic realities, right? Market realities. And that's why do you think the market's been going up? The market's been going up because of the strength of the economy, because of the strength of the consumer. And because, yeah, we went through the plandemic, of course, which was a planned epidemic. We went through that and increased money supply by 40%. That's never happened before in the country's history. All right. Increase in money supply of 40% is still filtering through the system. We still have unspent pandemic money from Trump's administration that still hasn't worked its way. Remember, this is all scheduled to be released into the economy over several years. Obviously, only about, I think last I saw, only 40% of the budget money that Biden's had approved will be released into the economy over the next 3 to 4 years. It's still got years to go. We still have some of Trump's money that's still being released to the economy. So instead of asking Jay Powell what they can do to stop inflation, maybe it's time that we started asking our Congress people what they can do, because it's all money printing, folks. It's all money printing. And that's why inflation is going to remain sticky. Like I wished it wasn't, but we are at what's the official, last official read? What is it? We'll call it 3% to round up or round down. We're right around 3% inflation, okay? The Fed's target's 2%. Will we get there? Probably not for a while. But at the same time, we have a very strong employment. We still have more people looking for jobs than jobs available by a pretty large number, right? Wages are growing by 4.2%. Productivity is growing by 3.7%. This is strong economic growth. Homes, home values, all-time high. Net worth, all-time high. Net equity in homes, all-time high. One-third of Americans own their home without a mortgage on it, all-time high. Again, consumers have cut their debt to disposable income by 25% in the last 15 years, and companies' debt to market caps trading at 50-year lows. This is what we're talking about. This is why the market's going up. And now, throw all that on fuel on the fire, we've got the innovation revolution, the new industrial revolution, the fourth industrial revolution underway now, which is going to, I think GDP growth is only going to grow from here. I know this sounds like heresy to people that hate Joe Biden, and I understand that. Okay, I'm not a fan of his either, but I am a fan of reality. And the reality is, as much as you may hate hearing it, as much as I may dislike having to say it, the reality is we are entering economic boom times. This is what the market sees. This is why the market's been going gangbusters. And it's why we believe it will continue to go gangbusters as the best opportunity for Americans to build significant wealth in the markets since the 1995 to 2000 dot-com meltup. That's where we are. That's what we've been saying here now for 20 months since we published The Big Bribe, only because it's the truth. I mean, this is the reality of where we are. Can things turn on a dime and get worse? Sure they could. We have so many things, and I get that. The risks are everywhere. They always are everywhere, right? There's a black swan lurking under every bed. I understand that. But what we have to work with today, this is a very vibrant, strong economy that we believe is only going to get stronger. And the lag effects of the Fed's rate hikes, again, with the Fed funds rates at 5.5%, is going to begin to have an impact on the economy. I want to just go over a couple of things here before I get to the markets today that we think are important. And again, you're hearing very few people talk about this, okay? I mentioned a minute ago, we've got wage growth of 4.2%. Again, inflation, 3% or less, okay? Consumers are coming out ahead, if you believe the official data anyway. And then we've got, again, productivity growth is at 3.7%. These are pretty remarkable statistics here that we hope continue to be the case. Again, we've entered the fourth industrial revolution. Not enough people, very few people actually are talking about this, what that means. When you see the largest tech companies in the country, right, spending $100 billion, reinvesting $100 billion into their own company, that's code for this is economic boom times. This is financial boom times for us as investors. And another kind of a simple parallel, I was in Las Vegas a couple weeks ago, and it's just on fire. I mean, if you've been in Vegas, you know what I'm talking about. All the locals tell you they hate it because things are so busy, but they also recognize what it means for the economy. When there's an old saying, when the Las Vegas economy is strong, recessions do not happen in the United States. And so there are a few takeaways from that. And again, from what is the innovation revolution, as we've called it, again, tech companies investing over $100 billion in their own companies. These are all code for the economy is on fire. We got another one too. Dr. Copper. Todd and I have been talking about this for a while now. Dr. Copper, copper is soared. Of course, they call it that because it's a great forecasting mechanism for the global economy, not just U.S., for the global economy. Over the last year, copper is up from 351 a pound to 455 a pound. Okay, I mean, you're talking 50% growth in copper in 1 year. It moved higher in 1 year. This tells you that we have a strong, not just U.S., but a strong global economy. Now, what's interesting about that is that, yes, while we have the 10-year at 4 point, it fell below 4.6% today. 10-year yields fell on this press conference today because, again, the Fed's staying their course. They know what that's going to result in. It's going to result in eventually lower rates and hopefully lower inflation. But what this also means is that we're probably not going to have to compete with what we saw in the 1995 to 2000 melt-up, where the 10-year yield averaged higher than 6%, even with the strong global economy, right? Even with inflation where it's been. 6% was the 10-year yield average, with some spurts above 7% in the 95 to 2000 melt-up. Again, today we're below 4.6%. So if the markets can boom during the dot-com melt-up with much higher rates, why can't we now? I think it's a fair question. Also, remember, the whole rate thing is about gravity. This is the way we presented it for a long time. U.S. rates are too high. They're restrictive. There's no question about this. And why will rates continue to fall? We call it gravity. Because two things control interest rates: the flow of money, right? Primarily institutional money flows. Are they buying your bonds? Are they selling your bonds? And central banks, what their desires are. With this in mind, if you listening today, if you were in charge of institutional investing for a major investment firm, a major bank, what have you, what would you rather invest in? Would you rather have your money invested in 10-year debt yielding 4.6% or German 10-year debt at 2.5%? Would you rather get 4.6 or 2.5? I think kind of an easy question to answer. Yes, I'll give you an even easier one. If you're running institutional investing for a major investment firm, would you rather invest your firm's money in U.S. 10-year debt yielding 4.6% or Japanese debt 10-year also yielding 0%? Because that's where their yields are. So it's that the flow of funds, the gravity of supply and demand of money flowing into the U.S. to get our higher yields before they fall lower. This is what's putting a lid on rates and why rates are not going to skyrocket from here. If that sounds too simplistic for you, I'm just here to tell you that's how it works, right? So again, we think we can make a very strong case that rates will continue to fall, that the innovation revolution we're in, which is full of disruption, right? Innovation disruption. What does it do? It brings prices down. That's called deflation, right? As Europe and China are now experiencing broad either deflation or disinflation, as their rates are falling, ours will follow in that vein. Bottom line is Jay Powell's exactly right. Steady as she goes, stay the course, only be data dependent. All of that we believe adds up to a great setup continuing to be in place for U.S. equities and for U.S. markets and for the U.S. economy. So we're very optimistic here, as you can tell. A lot of people talk about this. Todd mentioned yesterday the old saying, "Sell a man, go away." We shared this morning. Not the case. At least 9 of the last 10 years, the markets have been higher in the month of May. 9 of the last 10 years, we think that continues this year. Great setup now. Tyler shares with me. For the last 13 days, the fear and greed index has been in fear territory. Folks, a month ago, it was at extreme greed. Now it's spent 13 days in fear territory. Again, sentiment has flipped. All it takes is a couple of weeks of selling, and there go all the bulls, and here come all the bears. And that's just not how the markets work, first, folks. That's why it's so incredibly powerful to be a contrarian, especially at the extremes. Not that we're at the extremes today, but folks, we did just get to extreme oversold on the semis. They just flashed their biggest buying opportunity since the October 2022 lows. So this is a great opportunity for our market leader, the semis, which, by the way, were down today on AMD's earnings. NVIDIA followed down almost 5% at one point today. Yeah, the semis led lower today. We don't like seeing that, But we also don't see that as a trend. We think it's probably more than anything a short-term reaction to earnings, and again, the anxiety that was felt about today's FOMC statement. All right, today the Dow Jones did finish up, folks. At one point, we were up over 500 points. We've been down big time earlier as well, but the Dow did finish up 87 points. Kind of a disappointing day, if I'm being honest. Would like to have seen more from a very dovish Jay Powell today, by the way. There are some other external things happening. A bit of a, gold was hit hard yesterday. Bitcoin below 60,000, now 57,000. I'll talk about that more in a moment. So we did have some liquidity, kind of a feeling about this, which, by the way, is not the strong. It's not a sign of the strongest economy possible. I'll just throw that out there. This is something also the Fed is tracking. Instant liquidity. When events like this happen, where does the selling pressure take place? If it happens in gold, if it happens in bonds, and it happens in Bitcoin, that's a sign of liquidity not being as strong as some people might think that it is. That's what the Fed's watching, folks. This is why the Fed is not going to hike rates. This is why the Fed will be cutting rates, I believe, still 2 to 3 times by the end of this year. We're sticking to our forecast from earlier this year. Russ 2000, there was up 0.3%. That was our winner on the day. S&P 500 was down 0.3%. NASDAQ today also down 0.3%. And again, the 10-year today finishing below 4.6% on the yield there. In our internals today, pretty good internals, actually. The advanced decline for both the NYSE and NASDAQ, both positive, not 2 to 1, but 1.5 to 1 positive. Volume also positive today. 54% up volume NYSE, 58% up volume on NASDAQ. And finally, our 52 highs lows essentially came in flat today. Again, turned out to actually be a bit of a slow day today. The sector watch, even with all the excitement, a sector watch today. We had 5 sectors finish higher, 6 finished lower. Not much in either direction, really. Utilities up 1.1%. Energy down 1.6%. And our commodity watch today, gold today. Again, gold was down like $50 an ounce yesterday. Recouped over half of that today, closing up $27 an ounce at $23.30. Silver up, and that's, by the way, that's 1.1%. Silver up right at 1% today at 27 cents an ounce at $26.92. Copper again, Dr. Copper, incredibly strong, was actually flat today at $4.56 a pound. Crude oil today was down. This is why energy stocks were down. Crude oil down 281 a barrel. That's 3.4%. That's a 79.12. And finally, today, Bitcoin today. I just told you the price, right? Let's go over that again. Last trade in Bitcoin is 57,575. Had a range of below 56,000 at one point, high at 59.5 during Powell's presser. Again, last trade here, 57,577. I want to tell you what's going on here. First of all, some technical damage has been done. When Bitcoin fell below 60,000, that was an area of support. It tried to crack that line several times. It did it overnight. Again, hit to a low today, just below 56. Two reasons: disappointing, really, demand from the Hong Kong approvals of Bitcoin, of the ETFs. In the short term, they expected more demand. Some issues for mainland Chinese being able to buy these ETFs, some confusion around that. And again, plus the short-term technical action. Folks, know this. Short term, Bitcoin is being dominated now by futures trading. Can't fault them. This is what they do. And now we have a nascent market in these ETFs. It's a new market. Everyone's trying to fill it out. In other words, it's easier for these futures traders to push Bitcoin around. But that is a short-term. That's a short-term benefit for them only. And we're also seeing that Bitcoin is doing what it's actually done in the post-halvings. Again, we had just had its fourth halving. In the past, Bitcoin has put up an average gain of 19% in the month before the halving took place, with a gain of just 1.7% in the month following the halving. So it's kind of following course here. But we remind you what matters most. First of all, Bitcoin on the past three halvings has had an average move higher of 3,200, better than 3,200%. Again, that's the average move of the previous three halvings. Obviously, just had the fourth halving. So our advice, again, we're kind of a broken record here. Just as a reminder, we first recommended Bitcoin at 2,000 in 2017. We then sold it at 58,000. Then we re- at 21 in 2021. Then later in 2021, when it crashed, we re-recommended Bitcoin at 28,800. And we've been long since then. Bitcoin's been very good to us. We think it's going to continue to be what we recommend. And so we don't get caught up in the day-to-day craziness of this trading. Again, dominated by futures traders right now, is to use monthly dollar cost averaging. This is what we recommend to our clients, to our members, to our subscribers. Use monthly dollar cost averaging as we do with our favorite growth stocks. This is where you're not caught up in the mania of the day-to-day and overnight trading in Bitcoin. My target remains 100,000 on Bitcoin by the end of this year. I think it frankly happen a lot sooner. Because when these futures traders get on the wrong side of Bitcoin, as demand continues to soar, and that's what's going to happen here, you're going to see the inverse of this action take place. You're going to see a melt up occur. So I would tell you again, look, we're long and strong. We think Bitcoin's a great play here. Ignore the short-term insanity. Use monthly dollar cost averaging to add to positions, because that's what we are doing here. All right, folks, that's it for the day. Always appreciate you listening. Hope you had a great day and a better night. We'll see you back here again tomorrow after the close.